I made two transitions in my life, two career transitions. The first one, which was the more difficult one, it was when I decided to leave behind me the very technical work and then do a bit more commercial and business development work. That transition took me longer and it was a bit more painful, if you like. The second transition, it was a slightly easier. However, the skills that I used for both transitions, they were transferable, because even as a scientist, then the skills are similar. You know, as a geologist, I had to work with multi-scale, multidisciplinary data. I had to talk and communicate with engineers, geologists, petrophysicists, different types, and then come up with a model and put it together and present it. And pretty much, you know, it's a kind of similar what you do even if you're in commercial.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Tech Talks. Today, we have the pleasure of having Caterina Garifalu, who works for Clean Planet Energy, a company specialized in turning plastic waste into sustainable fuels for the shipping and aviation industries. Their fuels could reduce up to 75% of CO2 equivalent. But beyond the great mission of the company, we explored how Caterina has navigated her own energy transition as a geologist. First, internally within the oil and gas company she worked for, and then in her career pivot to align her values and passion for sustainability. Stay with us if you want to know how she did it, what was the importance of her network, of being mentored, and being visible when the opportunities arise. Caterina is a perfect example of a new generation of geoscientists that want to find meaning in their professional lives and that want to bring solutions in favor of a decarbonized economy. This is an important theme for me and for my partner Nadiel as explorationist, and we will explore more on this later in the year through the Energy Transition Program that we're putting together in collaboration with our friends at Terra. So stay tuned. And without further ado, hear our conversation with Caterina. Hi, and welcome to the new episode of the Climate Tech Talks. With me today, I have a very exciting guest. Her name is Caterina Garifalu, and she's the Commercial and Business Development Director at Clean Planet Energy. Welcome to the show, Caterina.
Hello, David, and congratulations for pronouncing my name so well.
It's one of those challenges.
Thank you very much. It doesn't happen very often.
Well, there you go. I guess like between Greek names and Latin names, we have sort of a connection there. So, well, I'm lucky then. But anyway, where are you joining us from today, Caterina?
I'm calling you from my flat in London, near Maida Vale.
Okay, so you're still in lockdown, I imagine.
Yes, I wish I would call you from my home in Greece, but no, I'm stuck in this in London for now.
Luckily, we're seeing, you know, the society opening up a bit, so there is hope at the end of the tunnel, let's say. So anyway, thank you for joining me, and Caterina. One of the reasons I invited you to come and talk to us, it's because I think that you have a fascinating transition in a way or background. You effectively went from a very geoscientific role all the way into changing completely industries. Well, I might say, you know, you're still into the energy game, but you went from fossil fuels, well, seismic fossil fuels as an explorer. And then you managed to, you know, join a, let's say, a startup. So you're in Clean Planet Energy. So I wanted to explore a bit how you managed to do so. So why don't you start, let's say, from the end, and then we backtrack a bit. So who are you working for mm-hmm. at the moment? Who's Clean Planet Energy and what are they doing?
Fantastic. First of all, David, thank you very much for having me today and all these nice words and describing my career as fascinating. Thank you very much. It's not very often that you stop, you pause for a bit and you think what you've done in your past. So thank you for saying this. So as you said now, I am the Commercial and Business Development Director of Clean Planet Energy, or CPE, and is a very exciting startup, and it resonates a lot with things that are very close to my heart. in a nutshell, CP, what we do is we take non-recyclable waste plastic and we convert it into ultra-clean fuels for marine and aviation sector, and also produce naphtha. So what we do is we do circular economy, and we're trying to provide an immediate solution to those industries while we're trying to find what the perfect solution would be to continue the global trade and continue transportation of people without impacting so much the environment. This is what we do. And the reason why it resonates a lot with my heart, as I said earlier, is I see that as I get older in my life, doing a job that has a deep meaning to me is becomes a priority. And I have to admit, I didn't start like that my career 15 years ago. I had different motives, if you like, back then. So I start paying more and more attention on the impact that human beings have on the environment. And when was it? Like a year ago, I think. I come from an island in Greece called Andros. It's a beautiful island in the Aegean. And yeah, I really recommend you to go. So there is a not a very famous island, and it's mostly a place where Greeks go holidays. And I was there in a very remote beach for the summer, and I was shocked to see how much plastic there was in the water and on the beach in a very remote area. A few months later, I started doing diving in Mexico. And again, the same thing, you know, you were diving in those beautiful places and you could see plastic and waste everywhere around you. So when CP came and talked to me for this potential role, it actually meant a lot to me to have a bit more active role in trying to do something that I can have a small or big impact to the environment, even from that position. So this is what made me, you know, attract me the most in CP. And I was really intrigued to work to a smaller company, to a startup, after leaving a big oil company. It was a state-owned company before. But yeah, that's what I do now. And I'm looking after partnerships. I'm looking after contracts for feedstock, for offtake, strategy, PR, marketing, all sorts of things.
A bit of everything, right?
A bit of everything.
It's a startup life. So let me unpack that for a moment. Well, first, I think that it's very inspiring to see. I think that a lot of people may judge without knowing a bit the personal journeys of some of our colleagues or peers in the oil industry. Mm-hmm. I think that especially our generation are exactly driven by what you mentioned, right? On values, on really trying to make a positive change. Probably a lot of people are surprised by hearing those stories from your scientists or people that have made their whole careers in oil and gas. So that's one point that I wanted to make. It's very inspiring to show that these sort of stories are possible and are, you know, very successful. So let me backtrack for a bit then. So you studied geology, right? So where do you study? How was those first beginnings?
So I went back to school. So I was in Greece at that time. So I went to the University of Patras, which is an area south of Athens and of Attiki, actually, not Athens. And I studied there for 4 years, geology degree, which is it's very interesting how the course works in Greece compared to other universities around the world, because the first 2 years that you do geology or physics or mathematics, all of those three schools share the same curriculum for physics, maths, and chemistry. So it was a very intense course around numbers, if you like. Because if I hadn't been a geologist, probably I would have chosen to be a mathematician. That's why I'm bringing that up. Oh. So it was loads of numbers and geology, of course, but it was very heavy towards the maths and the chemistry and the physics.
And then you came to the UK, so you did your PhD Is that correct, in Aberdeen?
Yeah. So I did my geology degree, and you know, it was really interesting and fascinating. My father actually wanted to become a geologist when he was younger. And then when I was studying, though, that degree in Greece, it was not a very popular degree. There's no oil and gas in Greece, and still isn't much of it. So I was trying to explore opportunities on what to do after I finished my degree. I'm really, really thankful that for my brother. He's a bit older than me, and he was already in the UK doing his career and his studies. So I always had someone to look up to and help me see opportunities that there were in life. I don't think it would have been easy without him to see what else a geology student could do outside the University of Patras. So it was always there telling me that, you know, you can do so many things. You can come in London, you can do another master's degree, you can go into banking, you can do so many other things. So he helped me see the world with a bit of wider perspective. Not having the money from my family to continue for a master's degree, I applied for scholarships for a PhD in all over the UK. So I didn't have the option for a master's, but because I finished my bachelor's degree with a scholarship, it was easy to get another scholarship as, you know, having a good background as a student. And then I got accepted to a PhD at the University of Aberdeen. And it was an amazing experience because it was part of a consortium where we were working for, I remember, 15, 20 top oil companies as part of the consortium. So I started early on to develop this a relationship between academia and the actual industry. So this is how I ended up doing my PhD. And I'm really, really thankful looking back in my life because it allowed me to travel so much in so many beautiful areas around the world, areas that no many other people have been. You know, being a geologist is very cool in that sense. And my main field area was in Argentina, so I had to travel
there.
Very nice, very, very nice food, very nice people. And by visiting those areas as a geologist, as a student, you get to know, you go to remote areas, you don't go to big cities necessarily. So you get to know more the people that they live there. And I was fascinated for having that opportunity and travel for months around beautiful places.
Yeah, I guess I went when you're a geologist or just scientist in general, right? I think that we do get to experience a fascination for how geological processes at geological scales happen. And I think that in a way connects us definitely with the climate urgency that's happening. We understand those. Obviously, there is no denial that we have a role, you know, anthropogenic element of emissions. So I wanted to just fast track a bit. So you spent definitely a couple of years afterwards in the industry. From all those travels, obviously you worked a lot in Africa, and with the connections that you had, and even the experiences working for a national company, what sort of things are you bringing with you from the industry that you're now applying? What sort of transition skills, if you like,
skills
you're now using? Yeah.
So it's interesting you say that. When I initially got a job with Clean Planet Energy, I was really fascinated and excited about what they do. But it was a bit different from what I used to do in my previous job. So I got stressed, like, am I going to be able to do what they want? And it's interesting, a few months after I have already joined, you realize that your every day-to-day job is actually identical. And it's just that the product changes, the people change, but the day-to-day tasks are very, very similar. And it's important for people to realize that, and people from the energy sector, that they're oil and gas, and that they want to enter into energy transition, that the skills are very similar. And what I'm saying with this is I made two transitions in my life, two career transitions. The first one, which was the more difficult one, It was when I decided to leave behind me the very technical work and then do a bit more commercial and business development work. That transition took me longer and it was a bit more painful, if you like. The second transition, it was a slightly easier. However, the skills that I used for both transitions, they were transferable, because even as a scientist, then the skills are similar. You know, as a geologist, I had to work with multi-scale, multidisciplinary data. I had to talk and communicate with engineers, geologists, petrophysicists, different types, and then come up with a model and put it together and present it. And pretty much, you know, it's a kind of similar what you do even if you're in the commercial sector. And between the oil and gas and the energy transition, my main job was to communicate with people, trying to simplify difficult, what it seemed to be difficult, and trying to simplify and communicate my ideas. It is a bit of sales pitch that I had to do in all of my jobs. Either you're trying to promote a geological model, or you're trying to promote an area or business area that you want to develop, or if you want to promote a partnership. It is this sales pitch skill that you take across all of your career.
I guess that it's interesting. We build all these sort of skills. I agree with you. Everyone is selling something. Either it's their technical work. So it's interesting that you mentioned that transition was harder. I wanted to ask you a bit why. What do you find the transition between a pure technical role into a more commercial? Because I see parallels. I went through the same transition, and I agree it was hard. And I guess if you can distill some sort of recipe, if you like, or some sort of advice for even young scientists that may consider sort of a similar approach, why would they get closer to commercial, etc. So what would you say to them? What worked for you?
What worked for me? When you do this, when you join a company as a technical person and you develop a career, a successful career as a technical person, it is harder to go against people's perception on what they think about you. So they have categorized you as a geologist or geophysicist. So for me, in my case, I find it difficult to convince the same people that I'm actually equally good on doing something else. And it did happen. So, but it required for me to be more persistent, to try and look for or create opportunities for me to demonstrate that I can do things. So I had to go over and beyond of my everyday to day work in order to, demonstrate to my managers at that time that I know I'm capable and I really want to do something else. So that was a bit tricky, because, you know, they know you as a geologist because you do a good job on what you do. They don't want you. It's not because they don't want you to progress your career, it's just they don't want to lose a very good geologist or a very good technical person. So that was a bit more challenging. And what I did to demonstrate that I was determined doing that is I decided to do an MBA.
Right.
At that time, because I did my PhD, I was working as technical. I had a very straight technical path in front of me, and I wanted to really clearly and loud say to my company that, look, you know, I want to do something else, and if you don't want to support me, then that's fine. I'll do it regardless of your support or not. So I think that gave quite a strong message of my intentions. And I went out of my way. I had to pay for my MBA, and I pretty much sacrificed my personal life for 2 years because there was no time.
No break, right?
No break.
London Business School. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was the London Business School. And it was 2 years almost, full on of work. But then I think it demonstrates a bit of character that, you're determined.
Yeah, correct.
To do, and that's what I say to some people. Then they ask me about the energy and about career transitions. It's like people shouldn't give up if they know what they want to do. I had loads of obstacles in my career. It was not easy, but I didn't give up. Once I realized what I wanted to do, I always trying to find ways to do it. And even if it doesn't work within the company you people are already in, you know, they should seek other opportunities.
Yeah, they can see around and see what's going on. Yeah,
exactly. So just don't give up.
No, I like that. It's a message of resilience, of grit, that, you know, everything is possible if you put, you know, your heart into it. Obviously, luck and opportunities most align. It's not only the talent.
I don't want to sound that it was easy. I think you have to be lucky enough to. I was lucky, I guess, in a sense that the company I used to work for, there were several commercial opportunities that they were coming my way, and then I was, you know, always raising my hand and putting myself forward to say, like, you know, I can help with this. I can do this. I can do that. So I was lucky in that sense. So I was surrounding from opportunities that my company had, so I could actually take my responsibility in few tasks and demonstrate that I really wanted to do this.
Yeah. So that brings me to a question then. So how crucial was that MBA then for you? Because the MBAs are usually one of those career pivots that you know, young and less young people might consider to say, hey, this will open up new opportunities, new industries. Do you think that your MBA at LBS is the door that opens with Clean Planet Energy? Do you think that helped you?
Oh, you know, this is not a straightforward answer. And I'll, not because that I didn't enjoy my time or I didn't find the LBS being helpful to me. It's just so many things have happened that led me where I am now, even the COVID or everything, the way that the whole world thinks has changed, right? So I changed as a person with what happened in my personal life. So it's not easy to isolate only the LBS and say that it's because of
there's
that.
There's not only one viable. Yeah, no, I agree.
One thing. What I would say this, like, is you know, it's challenging doing it part-time. So people should think about the pros and cons. I started and be open-minded. That's what I recommend to people. I started my MBA thinking very, very, you know, I was very stubborn. I was very determined that I want to do the MBA because I want to go back to the company I was. I want to go up the ladder. I want to have this and this and this position. Yeah. And I want to do this. Okay. And the MBA is the only reason that it can help me do it. And I remember very well the first day I was in my school and we had to write what we want to do and why do we want to do the MBA. And I guess I'm thankful that I was exposed to so many brilliant minds and great professors at London Business School that helped me realize what I actually want to do and what I don't want to do. So I decided that I don't want to go back to a very corporate
environment. Yeah.
Career. It's too stiff for me. I want to be able to, you know, I'm a bit tired of surrounding myself from a very bureaucratic
environment,
if you like, environment that for me is really important. Yeah, values in life. But it was because of the MBA that I started thinking differently.
So you had that clarity via all those conversations.
It is amazing. It's 2 intense years with very, very bright minds that you are surrounded. So I think, it takes a time to think about what you want in life. And this for that, I'm very thankful.
Yeah, and I guess, there are obviously different routes. And people, you know, they may as well say, hey, this is a non-negotiable thing. I need to do an MBA, and that's fine. There are obviously those people out there. But then having that intellectual curiosity and those conversations are not exclusive of those environments, right? So you can have those elsewhere. They're probably a bit harder to find, but I guess if you're curious enough and you're connecting in other ways, it's possible.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. That's why I would say to people who cannot afford an MBA that there is still options for those people outside. But what it helps you with the MBA is you commit. You commit for 2 years to do something, and then you have to find the time to do it.
Especially if you're paying yourself, right? So there is that financial commitment. So let's discuss a bit on Clean Planet Energy. Can you repeat again what sort of industries you're tackling, why the kind of things that you're bringing to market are important, and where are you at the moment? I understand that you are in the building phase of some of the plants. So can you give us a summary of where you are as a company? What are the scaling up plans? Obviously, if you're hiring, or there are other milestones that are worth discussing for the next coming 2-3 years.
Of course. And I'm always very excited to talk about CP. So we're in a very exciting part of our journey. We have created very nice momentum, and we are growing. So what we're doing now, we have 2 plants that are under construction phase, with the first one, both in UK, with the first one to be live Q1, Q2 next year. And the next one to be 6 months to follow, 6 months after it. And we are growing in many different directions. So we are hoping this year to be in a position to announce many more locations in UK. We have interesting partnerships we are discussing for both feedstock and offtake. We had quite a few announcements recently regarding our products, both for the aviation and the marine sector. And I'm grateful that those have created a really nice impact to the market, and that has brought us interesting opportunities from places all around the world, from, you know, Asia or US or Australia or Europe. So it's really exciting to see that there is a very nice, if you like, momentum around the world to try and do something to eliminate waste and do something good for the environment while you are part of the circular economy. So it's really nice when I get emails from weird places around the globe that they want to learn more about what we do and how they can help us and how they can partner with us. So this is very exciting. We're a small team. We're a team of around 10 people that we work very close with each other. We have a flat structure. At some point, I guess, when things are getting, the busier we get, I think at some point we'll have to try and increase our team. I cannot wait when we start building the first eco plan. You know, what we do is very unique in terms of the way we build our plants, and 30% of our investment goes into the outer shell, which is more onto the way they look and they feel, the plants. So we have tranquility gardens, nature reserves built around the main facilities. So I'm really looking forward when that part of the construction starts to actually be physically there and help the team.
Fascinating. No, a lot definitely going on. And just to understand or help everyone understand, so basically you're linked into a circular economy. Mm-hmm. If I understand correctly, you're helping decarbonize hard to abate sectors like aviation and shipping.
Yes.
So the output that you guys produce or will produce in these eco plants will be syn fuels, eco fuels. How are they categorized, and how do they compare with normal, you know, aviation fuels?
We meet the same specifications as the biofuels and HVO. The legislation needs to get up to speed a bit, because this is why we find it hard. The legislation is not synced around the world yet when it comes to waste to energy. I think they see the potential, but they need to, help the companies develop further. So we're focusing more on the marine aviation sector. Our products, they provide a minimum of 75% reduction in CO2 compared to fossil fuels. We also have a very small percent of dioxide, nitrogen, and sulfur oxides that are also poisonous emissions for the for the health. And we're focusing on those two industries, if you like. You know, even though our products can also be used on the road and road transportation, maybe because they have alternative solutions as well. But when it comes to marine and aviation, you know, by tomorrow night, another 75,000 cargo ships will set sail, and I don't know how many hundred thousands of flights will fly, and you cannot just stop global trading.
Yeah,
so we need an immediate solution more in those sectors now, until possibly finding what could be an even better solution. So we need more CPEs to be around the world and more companies like us to support, and more solutions to support this journey.
Absolutely. And that brings me maybe one of the last questions, but then how do you see your competitors? Obviously, this sounds pretty much like hydrogen, ammonia, all those might be potential solutions as you're describing. Do you see this as a zero-sum game, or on the contrary, you think that bringing another fuel into the mix will actually help? How do you see that ecosystem evolving?
Very interesting you asked me that, David, because yesterday I joined a conference online, and in the panel with me, there were representatives that are providing solutions through hydrogen and other solutions. And what I said is like the world needs energy. I don't think there is one solution for everything. And we need all of the solutions to work together. So that's why I don't see either of them as a competitor. And the same came from them as well. So they don't see why we do as competition. The more, the better. That would be my answer to your question. I don't think it's only one perfect solution for that.
No, definitely. So then last, if we can say, what would be your last remarks? What would be the things that you're looking forward to this year in terms of a scale? Are you looking for new partnerships? Are you looking for, you know, bringing the cost down? Are you looking for maybe potentially raising some money? What are the things that will make 2021 a great year for Clean Planet Energy?
We're looking for partnerships that will help us grow. We want to grow. We want to grow fast. We're very ambitious. That's what we're looking. We're looking to work with local authorities. We're looking to work with charities that they deal with plastic. We want to work with the private sector. This is the year where we make some of our key partnerships that they will help us grow in the future.
And for the moment, just focusing on the UK, or there are plans to already move into another market?
No, we're planning. We have plans to expand outside the UK as well.
Well, very exciting. So maybe last thing, Caterina, just to inspire again the, you know, some of our peer geoscientists that are thinking about energy transition, etc. So, is there any resource that you would recommend to them in terms of, hey, you can have a look at these, you know, books or either podcast or, you know, programs as well, or mentoring sort of programs? So what would you suggest to them if you want to inspire them? Hey, energy transition obviously is happening. Don't feel like there are options. So what would you suggest?
There's so much content out there. You know, what I would say is, mentoring is really, it has really helped me, finding my path. Mentoring and taking the time to network, connect with people. The more I had, discussions with people, the more I realized what I wanted or I didn't want to do. But that takes time and effort to do it. And, you know, it's not always successful. You know, you're trying to talk to 100 people and then maybe 5 reply to you, and you're lucky if one actually is actively engaged with you. So that's why I say, like, don't give up. That's what I would say to people. And be curious to talk to people, and actually mean it. Be authentic with your communication. There's so much material, so many books. I wish I had the time to read even more. And you know, it was not easy. My journey has not been easy. It has taken me a while. But it's really important how you feel when you wake up in the morning, you have to go to work. And it's really a very personal thing for each one to discover what actually makes them happy, and what it will make them happy to go to work every day. And for me, I feel really privileged that I found that, even maybe later in my career, but I did find that, with joining Clean Planet Energy, without, of course, regretting anything that I've done in the past, because that has contributed to who I am now, to the skills I have now. So it's really important to embrace every step in your career. I had roles that they were not very appealing to me, but in each one of them, I'm trying to find something exciting about this role and, you know, move forward.
It's a great message. I think it's a great closing. And we really wish you well. It's nice that you have found that place in the career. I think a lot of people spend their whole lives trying to get to that space. And so we really wish you well. And obviously a lot of success for Clean Planet Energy. So with that, I wanted to thank you, Katarina. It's been great to have you. And hopefully we can get another chat soon.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not reflect the opinion of my current employer, TES. If you like this episode, please subscribe and give us a like. It really is important for us. This episode was produced by Julio César Fernández.